around the flood is Inside Motorsport.
Well, once again, we're back for another weekend's motorsport, and it's Colin Ford here behind the panel. Peter Norton, you're back with us again this week, and of course, being the Honda Indy 300, obviously, you'd be like a hog in heaven, wouldn't you?
Yes, I love this stuff. The kart racing always puts on a fantastic show, and this race again showed that Queensland's always very good for upsets and plenty of action, plenty of carnage, and yes, quite an interesting, exciting race. I have to say I'm a little bit concerned, though, leading into the Australia's biggest race of the year coming up, Bathurst, and the Channel 10 are really not in fine form. But anyway, it was a fantastic race, and we'll run through a few results and things a little bit later in the show.
That's right. Of course, we've got lots of news of motorsport happening around Australia and around the world. Of course, last weekend we saw the final round of the Formula One World Championship, Michael Schumacher taking out his first Formula One Championship with Ferrari, the first driver championship for Ferrari for 21 years. Big celebrations in Italy at the end of that, and that was obviously something that, as I say, the Tifosi went wild.
Yes, actually coming up during this week will be the Ferrari Owners Register having their annual convention or whatever they call it, and they'll have that little extra to celebrate, of course. The Ferrari fans are just so fanatical. I've been in touch with some of my friends in Canada. They're equally over the moon about the Ferrari victory. So that's pretty fantastic stuff for them.
Mm-hmm. And of course, the first time that the Ferrari drivers won in 21 years, first driver. And next weekend, of course, they're going to go and try and take out the Daily Double. If they can win in Sepang in the Malaysian Grand Prix, they'll be going for the Manufacturers' Championship as well as the Drivers' Championship, so that'll really make Ferrari's year.
Yes, it's been a long time coming, hasn't it, that they've really struggled. They've thrown away some fantastic opportunities, but this year they've finally put enough positive things together. And yeah, let's hope that they can take out the Daily Double.
Mm. Well, anyhow, we have now a report from Jonathan Ledyard of the BBC about last week's results from Suzuka.
Michael Schumacher was as good as his word. And when Schumacher's good, he is very good. He vowed here 12 months ago that 2000 would be his year. And around the figure of 8 that is this special Suzuka circuit, his 8th victory of the season, on the back of his 8th pole of the year, delivered the title which Ferrari seemed to have been chasing for an eternity. 7,700 days, if you're counting, from that mad moment at Monza when a fuzzy-haired South African called Jody Scheckter brought Italy to a standstill in 1979. Ferrari's Tifosi had found it difficult to take to Schumacher. He came to them in 1996 after two acrimonious and controversial championships with Benetton. His reluctance to speak Italian made him appear even more cold and aloof. And when he deliberately drove into Jacques Villeneuve at Jerez in 1997, the respect which his ability undoubtedly commanded was in danger of drying up. Today, though, goodwill and champagne will be a ready, intoxicating mix in Italy, not to mention Germany, which cherishes him as a national hero. Mika Hakkinen deserves admiration for his part in the thrilling climax, but he and McLaren well know you can't afford to give Schumacher a head start, which saw him reel off a hat-trick of victories in Australia, Brazil and San Marino. The killer blow was another smoking engine failure at Indianapolis 2 weeks ago, which let Schumacher off the leash again. His conduct isn't always appealing. His character will never have the finesse or charisma of his hero Ayrton Senna. But Schumacher has been the star attraction of 2000. He's always the man to beat, the benchmark for his generation. And like Senna, he's now a 3-time world champion. Now that Schumacher's done it once with Ferrari, who's to say he won't do it again? And again. After all, another team in red called Manchester United waited long enough for a championship, and look what they've gone on to achieve.
We'll trust the British commentator bringing in the story of a British soccer team in red who didn't win for a long time and kept on winning. So, typical BBC coverage, as they say.
What a logical connection. Red, Italians, and English soccer. Yes, you really have to stretch it for that one. And love him or hate him, you have to respect the skill and ability of Michael Schumacher.
That's right, he's proven his point. You know, he's really, as I said, he's the one driver who could bring the Ferrari up to the level of the McLarens, and in some ways the McLarens team sort of dropped the bundle a little bit here and there. Unfortunately what happened for Mika Hakkinen at Indianapolis with his engine problem there, which has, you know, traced down to a faulty valve. Those are the sort of things that can ruin a Formula One championship for you.
Yeah, that's right, but yeah, that's motorsport. You have to just work hard and minimise those sort of down times.
Mm. Well, naturally enough, they were able to get hold of Michael Schumacher after the event, and the interview there coming up from the BBC with Michael Schumacher giving his impression after winning the World Championship?
It's difficult to find proper words for such feeling. I mean, there was such an outbreak of emotion initially when I crossed the line. I mean, this conditions were difficult today. The rain, no rain, little bit more. The upgoing, the downgoing through the season, even with a victory, the way we did it in a fight until the... a bit easier for me. it's simply outstanding and no words for it to explain it.
Championship. Were there periods during that period of time, during that period, where you thought it's never going to happen again?
No, I didn't think it would never going to happen again, but obviously every year it didn't happen. It got longer and longer, and you somehow get more upset that it doesn't work finally, even though we always felt we had an opportunity and then we couldn't use it for many reasons. And finally doing it, I mean, it's simply great. I mean, imagine what is going on right now in Italy. That must be simply amazing.
The race turned at the second pit stop, and we heard you on the driver really thanking Ross. I mean, what was the conversation between you two around that time on the second stop?
Basically, as we saw Mika going in for his pit stop, we knew we had a couple more laps to go, and we knew these were the crucial laps. The problem was I had traffic, and I wouldn't say it was too easy to pass them, because it cost me a little bit of time. And then when I entered the pits, there was this Benetton spinning in front of me and moving backwards, and I didn't know where he was going to go. So I thought it isn't enough, simply, because it was spitting off rain and I wasn't really thinking I was going as fast as I should have done. And then I came out and Ross kept me updated, said, it's looking good down the pit lane in 80 kilometers per hour. And he says, I was just waiting for the word, no, it was not looking good enough. Or things like this, because you cannot see where is your competitor. And then he said, it's looking bloody good. And that was obviously an amazing moment. And from that on, I mean, you simply just hope nothing breaks. The rain, which was going on and off again, wasn't helpful, because as you're in front, you don't want to make a mistake. If you're behind, you somehow have nothing to lose. You have to keep pushing. And it wasn't the ideal circumstance, but in the end of the day, it doesn't matter whether it's ideal or not. It was enough.
Yeah, Michael Schumacher there, obviously a little bit of emotion in the voice. If people have seen the coverage of him just after he crossed the line of the checkered flag, the way he was pounding that steering wheel on that Ferrari, he was really ecstatic.
I saw somewhere that they thought he actually bent the steering wheel in his little frenzy of cheer there.
Well, I thought that'd make a good souvenir for someone. I'm sure there's probably a member of the Ferrari pit crew who made sure that when it seemed that car pulled up, the hand went in, got the steering wheel out, but probably went back in while they did the weighing and checking. That was one of the interesting things too. Was, apparently there was a time after when the car was in Parc Fermé after event where everybody was sort of waiting for the obligatory appeal or technical infringement to sort of notice to come from McLaren. Nothing happened. It was, you know, you've won the championship, thank you very much. And Mika Häkkinen in the press conference afterwards was apparently very, very polite about things.
Yes, that's right. I think McLaren and Mika Häkkinen really are a credit to the sport, the way they behave this year, because it was last year, I think, at Suzuka, where there was the protest about some of the parts on the Ferrari. Or was that the year before? Anyway, yes.
Last year.
Last year, yes. In recent history, there have been protests and all sorts of strife about Ferrari going into the final round of the championship. So, yes, I think it's a credit to all involved that it's much cleaner, and some kind words. It really is good for the sport.
Mm. And, of course, the word now is that having won the championship, that things could be up in the air with Ferrari's design and engineering team. The word that Ross Brawn, of course, who's sort of a part of the brains behind the team, Rory Byrne, aerodynamics and engineering man again, both people that have got very strong connections with Michael Schumacher, both have been wanting to retire for a long time, may now say, well, okay, look, we've got the 2001 car basically designed, it's ready to go, We're going to go and find a beach somewhere, sit back and relax. Good luck.
There's a lot to be said for going out on top, isn't there? There's too many stories of people who've stuck around for a couple of years too long. And actually, later in the show, we've got a few bits of an interview from Daryl Waltrip. And I think he's a prime example of what happens if you just keep sticking it out that little bit too long. You become a little bit of an embarrassment.
Mm. And that is the real danger if you, you know, do stay along too long. Because in this guy's cases, you know, like, you can only sort of keep trying to, you know, sort of do what you do. You know, all you can keep doing is trying to make a better mousetrap, as it essentially is. And after, I suppose, after, you know, 20, 30 years of doing that, you must reach a stage and say, look, I'm only going to do something different. I'm going to design a better roller skate or something. But no, I think it's, I'd say, very, very likely with the fact that Schumacher has finally won the championship for Ferrari, we'll probably see now a bit of a change. They'll always try and keep people if they can, but I suppose a number of people, and their basic premise was, we get to the point where he wins, when he's won, then we'll go and do something else.
And who knows, it could be 21 years till they win it again.
Yeah, heaven above. Interesting note that one of the visitors up in Queensland called IndyCoast, that's the Honda Indy 300, was Rubens Barrichello, en route from Suzuka in Japan, sleeping in Malaysia, and his comments were, I couldn't think of a better place to spend the week in between.
Well, that's right. If you're in the neighbourhood, you might as well pop in, see some of your countrymen racing in another series, and, of course, the scenery up in Queensland is pretty good as well.
Mm. And, of course, still talking Formula 1, the word this week that Mark Webber is fairly close to possibly signing his deal finally with Benetton.
Yes, that's pretty exciting news. It's been sort of on the edge there for quite a while. Everyone's been expecting it. And yes, all of the positive signs are coming out of the people involved, and it seems as though it won't be the usual, you know, sign them up for life type deal, because that's what Mark Webber was determined to avoid at all cost. It was looking like a 3-year testing deal with a run in Formula 3000, a rather high profile and well supported run, so it's looking good.
And of course, the beauty of it is that Benetton does become Renault in 2002, I think it is. So it's the right place to be at the right time.
Yes, so all the best for Mark Webber there, and we'll keep watching with interest.
Yeah, the lovely sounds of a Ferrari Formula 1 car. Well, last week as well, we reported about the problems after the Tour de Course World Round of the World Rally Championship. Of course, Colin McRae involved in a very, very major accident there in his Ford Focus, trapped in the car for some time. And, you know, it wasn't just him, it was Freddie Loy. Freddie Loy, I couldn't believe when I read that he had crashed his Mitsubishi from the first corner of the first stage.
Yeah, well, he just signed a contract for, I think, the next year, so he must have been feeling pretty confident about his place in the team. So to celebrate, you throw it off on the first corner. It's not the way I'd celebrate, because it was another pretty nasty crash, except he came out of it quite a lot better than Colin McRae, of course.
And Colin, during the week, has had surgery on his cheek, a plate put in. San Remo Rally starts actually tomorrow. It's one of those rallies, for some reason, who knows why, they, instead of running on the Friday, Saturday, Sunday, they run on the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. It must be tied in with, I think, public holidays up in Italy or something like that. But anyhow, we've got a report from the BBC where they're talking to the manager of Ford Motorsport in the UK about the accident and about Colin McRae's chances of getting back into the car before the race San Remo.
He's certainly a lot better than he was on Saturday evening. He's now back in Edinburgh. He was checked by a surgeon there last night, and it appears as though they're going to do the operation on Friday.
And if they do it on Friday, how soon could he get back to driving his car again?
Well, we're all very optimistic that he can be fit for San Remo. I know he's put the surgeon and the doctors under pressure. He says that he wants to be fit, and I think he'll be desperate to get back in the car.
Right, because he's got, what, three more rallies this year, is that right?
Three more rallies, and there's four drivers now within 5 points of the World Championship, so it's still all to play for, and we're confident he'll be there.
Right, because he needs to be in all three, clearly, to have a chance of winning, doesn't he?
Yes, I mean, if he misses, it's going to make it then very, very difficult. for sure.
I haven't seen footage of what happened here, but I mean, judging by that description, he sounds as if he was lucky to escape with just those injuries, wasn't he?
Well, I must admit, I've had a really good look at the car, and he's a very, very lucky man. I think it's a credit to the strength of the whole car as well, but he's certainly a very lucky boy.
But you say, hopefully, by the end of this week, you reckon there'll be good news?
We're very confident at the moment that it'll be good news, yes. I mean, subject to how the operation goes, but the feeling is, and the will from him to actually be on the starting line in San Remo, I'm very confident to be there.
Yeah, interesting to see the fact that things have worked out well, and actually, I'll do now to put up the, another report from our good friends at the BBC, this time from our other friend Greg Strange, who we often get hold of from time to time. Used to be our man, used to cover things for the British Touring Car Championship, and his report on the arrangements for the lead up San Remo for Colin McRae.
McRae says his aim is to win in San Remo. If he does that, it'll be one of the most remarkable sports comebacks of the year. 2 weeks ago, he was airlifted to hospital after crashing out on the Rally of Corsica. His Ford Focus went 20 metres down an embankment, rolling as it went, and hitting a tree before coming to rest upside down. McRae, unconscious, was trapped in the wreckage, with his crash helmet jammed in the roll cage. It took rescuers 40 minutes to free him. Remarkably, his injuries were limited to a fractured cheekbone and bruised lung. Surgeons operated on Monday to put a plate across the cheekbone. Yesterday, they said he could race. Ford will name him as the nominated works driver for the San Remo, the 12th of this year's 14-round championship, and he'll begin practice on Monday.
Yeah, it's very, very lucky fellow. It's actually interesting that there were some photographs, I think, I'm trying to remember if I actually saw them, of the three accidents in terms of where the cars came to rest. And looking at all three, it was one of the situations where that you had quite a long drop-off on the from the side of the road down into the gully beside, and the distance that all three cars, that is McLaren's Mitsubishi, McRae's Ford Focus and Lawyer's Mitsubishi, dropped from below the road, it is quite frightening. And the fact that, I suppose, it's something that says about the strength of the rally cars, that given the distance those cars fell from the road doing high speed, that the driver survived only with basic minor injuries, is a real testament to just how good the safety features in those World Rally cars are.
Yes, and there's a lot of questions now being asked about the safety of that event. So many blind corners where the corners actually tighten on you, so you can't really judge the correct speed on entry. Puts a great deal of emphasis on the pace notes, and they keep adding stages, taking away stages to keep it fresh and exciting. But for many drivers now, that event is becoming too exciting, and they're really starting to ask questions, and also questions about the medical responses, calls for having a medical helicopter now to follow the field to really assist the response times there. I think that the Australian Rally Championship is really quite well placed. They have the first intervention vehicles spread throughout the field and through the stages, so the Australian Championship is definitely on par to the World Championship, and I think that maybe in some places that touch better. So I think Australians can be proud of what they've got. Also interesting is these guys go through many, many airports, and of course you expect people in motorsports to have steel plates and legs and things like that, but won't it be funny to watch McRae coming through airport security and the metal detectors picking up that steel plate in his cheek?
I reckon that's going to be really fun and games for McRae. But actually, you do get a certificate, a medical certificate, that indicates the fact you do have surgical steel implanted in your body. As you can imagine, Barry Sheen is a classic for setting them off.
He'd take hours through the airports, wouldn't he?
Oh, for sure.
This is Mario Andretti for Avalon Racing. Stay tuned for Inside Motorsports and all the news in the world of kart racing.
Yes, there were plenty of those sounds up on the Gold Coast today for the Honda Indy 300, where Adrian Fernandez took the victory in a very action-packed race. At the start of the race, all the eyes were on Gilles Defferrin, who's the current championship leader, and of course, reigning champion Juan Pablo Montoya,
And it was quite an exciting start, with De Ferran perhaps getting just the edge off the start line, getting his nose just in front, and unfortunately they came together on the first chicane. The chicane at the Gold Coast Circuit is quite a notorious place for accidents, and really the drivers should be thinking a little bit more about taking it easy through that turn, particularly with the championship at stake. Now there's quite a bit of debate about really who is at fault. The TV commentators quite clearly putting the blame on Montoya. They're putting the blame on Gilles De Ferran. I beg to differ there. I think Montoya is sort of studying the Formula One footage, and he's starting to practice for when he's up against the Formula One guys next year, and he took a leaf out of the book of Michael Schumacher and decided to do a bit of the squeeze act off the start line. And as I said, with Gilles De Ferran just that nose in front, I think it was a little bit inexcusable for Montoya to try to squeeze him up against the wall and trying to squeeze into the line going through that chicane. So I think Montoya was to blame there, and perhaps quite rightly, Montoya now is mathematically out of the championship, but it did ruin quite a good race. Also tied up in that accident was Dario Franchitti. How many races has he left this year packing his bags on the first lap? It really has been disappointing there. That left Paul Tracy to stream out smoother for lead. He was really going well, putting 1 second per lap on the rest of the field, and he did that for about the first 10 laps. And then something that we've seen before from Paul Tracy in the team cool green car, and that is electronic gremlins creeping in. He sort of trundled down an escape road, trying to stop and reset all the computers on board. And once he got it firing again, he sort of led a charge from the back of the pack, and we're really watching with a lot of interest to see if he could claim another victory from the back of the pack. Another leader at that time was Alex Tagliani, a rookie this year, and he blew his pit strategy basically, running out of fuel sort of one lap just before going into the pit, so he was out of the race. That left Jimmy Vassa, Michael Andretti and a few others to lead the race, we've had a few big names still there. Jimmy Vassa was very disappointed with some of the pit strategy. Many of the cars ducked into the pits when Paul Tracy had his little escape road incident, and they pulled out the yellow flag. So Vassa was very disappointed when he came out of the pits later in the race to find that many of the other competitors had got out before him. And that, of course, is because they required a whole lot less fuel. So Vassa was feeling very disappointed with the pit crew, perhaps unjustifiably there. But anyway, he sort of battled on for more of the race. Michael Andretti led for a while. The Ford engine let him down again.
Honestly, that was a major engine blow-up, obviously from the oil system, by the way, that fire came up in the smoke. It definitely wasn't fuel.
That's right. These cars with the ethanol-type fuel, they don't generate flame and smoke. So whenever you see that flame and smoke, it's definitely an oil fire. And yes, the Ford engines haven't had such a great run this year, and some of the teams are really looking at replacing their Ford engines with Toyotas and other things for next year, and we might have some news on that later in the show. Australia's hope in the race, Jason Bright. He had a pretty troubled weekend, having to dial himself into a new car and a new circuit, and unfortunately many of the practice sessions were wet, so he qualified. Well, people were putting it quite optimistically, saying he qualified 23rd or 24th, let's be honest, he qualified second last. And that's where he sort of started the race, and that's sort of where he was running for a great part of it. But with a lot of the attrition and drama going on throughout the field, he was his way up to fifth place, and things were looking good for the Aussie hope there. Unfortunately, he got tangled up with Roberto Moreno, or when Roberto Moreno lost it and stuck it into the wall, he got tied up with people trying to avoid that incident, and that put him out of the race, unfortunately.
Yeah, I must admit, not too bad, not too shabby a first appearance by Jason. Limited time in the car, first time in an Indy car race, I suppose, as a debut. Not too shabby, really.
Yes, that's right. It's not the way I'd like to sort of put on a show for the home crowd. I would like to do one or two races as preparation, so you can really go there prepared. So he really was up against it, and I agree, he did a fine job in the circumstances.
Hopefully we'll see him in the car again next year or another car next year.
Yes, that's right. I think his deal with the Queensland government does put him in that race for 3 years. But really, of course, what he wants is to get a full-time drive in the kart series, and then he can really show what he's capable of. Now, Roberto Moreno, he's a driver who had an even more miserable race. As I said, he stuck it into the wall, and that took him out. But he really struggled through qualifying in the first part of the race, and he really didn't show that he was a worthy championship contender, and this lousy result really wipes him out from the championship as well. So that sort of left really a situation of who wants to win this. No one really wanted to win it. Max Pappas and Paul Tracy were sort of fighting towards the end of the race, trying to get up and take it out. Paul Tracy got a little bit impatient, as he tends to do at times. His great aggressive driving style is exciting and fantastic to watch, but sometimes it's his undoing as well. And it sort of happened again. He gave Pappas a bit of a nudge, and then in trying to avoid the car in front of him, he managed to get out of the way, but then some of the backmarkers behind him slipped past both of them, and he sort of tangled on the next corner with some of those, and that put him out of the race, and that was pretty disappointing as well. That would have been quite exciting to watch Tracy to battle on to try to take victory. So that really left us with Adrian Fernandez. He's not one of the most high-profile drivers, but he is a consistent fighter in there, and he has won a few races this year, and that leads him second in the championship, so he may be the real contender there to take on Jules Affirin. For the rest of them, Paul Tracy may be a mathematical chance for the championship, but he really needs awful luck from the other drivers for him to clinch that one. Other drivers that are really seem to be out of it now include Kimi Brack, Jimmy Vassar, Roberto Moreno, Michael Andretti. They're just going to the final race now to put on a good show and to start thinking about next year. So the places were Adrian Fernandez from Kenny Brack, the rookie of the year. The position seems fairly certain for Kenny Brack, and we're still hoping that he can win a race. He's had so many seconds and thirds, he really is capable of bigger and better things. Jimmy Vassar battled on from what he saw as a poor pitch strategy to take out a fine third place. Cristiano D'Amato was fourth. Patrick Carpentier was fifth. Julio Castroneves in sixth. Michelle Jordan Jr. in seventh, from Tony Kanaan, Oriol Serva, and Mauricio Guzman taking out the final spot in the top ten. So it was a pretty exciting race.
Yep, one of those races that really had a lot of it was based around qualifying, a top qualifying session. We haven't got any hold of the post race comments, but we do have some of the comments from the drivers following that qualifying session, which was really sort of a tit for tat session between the very late in the final session, because it had been wet and damp. Very late in the session, some temperature started getting to the track and the tyres, and you had Montoya setting fastest time, then the Affirin came out and set fastest time, and the checkered flag had been shown for the end of the session, but Montoya was still on the track and going, and essentially he came out what would normally be the cool down lap and set fastest time again to take pole back from the Affirin, all within a matter of seconds.
Yes, it was pretty exciting stuff, and I think that's why I was bitterly disappointed to see Montoya out on that first lap. Some of the footage of him during practice was fantastic, using all the track, all of the kerb, and some of the footpath. I wanted to see that all day, so I think it was somewhat robbed.
Mm. Well, here's what Juan Montoya had to say after qualifying.
I think it was really good, you know, since this morning and since I've been here, the car has been really good. You know, yesterday I ran out of time with my tires and, you know, red flag. Today, you know, I went out and on my second lap, straight out, was as fast as yesterday, and it went red twice. So I said, oh, you know, the car is pretty good. And, you know, I did a couple of changes to the car to try and improve a little bit, and, you know, I was just pushing as hard as I could. And, you know, this is my last road course here, and, you know, it's very nice to be on the pole.
Like you were really hanging it out there, but just a tenth short. Tell us about the last lap.
Yeah, I mean, I knew I had to come up with something a little bit better than what I had before in that last lap, because Roger told me on the radio that it was P2, so I was really trying to put a nice lap together, and got a little bit crossed up a couple of times, and I think I had to get out of the throttle and lost a little bit of time like that. But, you know, I think nevertheless, front row is a good position for us.
Juan crossed the line on his quick lap right behind you. I mean, for how long did you think you had the pole back?
I didn't really. I mean, I just saw 6.18, and I thought, hopefully that would be enough. And then I asked Roger, he said, no, he beat you. He was right behind you, and he just beat you.
Tracy's fourth on the grid, Michael sixth. Your thoughts on the race?
Well, I like I said earlier, I still feel like we have to race well tomorrow, and if we want to win this championship at all. So our plan is to go for an attack straight away.
Thanks. Good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course, sitting there on the grid was our friend Kitty. The Scotsman, he also was not having much luck this weekend. And for him, it was a case of, well, he's going to throw on the grid, but taking out the opening lap practice. This is what he had to say about qualifying.
Yeah, the conditions were definitely difficult because of the, first of all, the rain this morning. We could look to go out and improve the car from yesterday because we just didn't have any track time. And even when we were running the end of the session this morning, it was still wet. So went out to qualifying, you know, a bit of a guess on the settings, really. But it didn't matter because it's just yellow flag, yellow, red flag, red flag, red flag all the time. So we came in and put the second set of tyres on, and I think at that point nobody had improved their time. The track was definitely getting better every lap, so we put the new tyres on and got traffic on a couple of laps and got one lap that I really was reasonably happy with. It was pretty much the limit of the car anyway, and I was on a better lap and I made a mistake my last lap before the checker, so kind of a bit disappointed, but you know, I think we're looking good for the race, certainly looking better than we were yesterday this time.
Also on the card at the Honda Indy 300 on the Gold Coast was, of course, the V8 supercars. And the Ford comeback continued there, with Paul Radicich taking out two of the three races, and he also finished second in today's final race. But in that final race, Russell Engel managed to pass him late in the race to take out one Holden victory. It was also quite notable for another couple of things. Something that made a Ford fan rather quite happy was seeing Mark Scaife lose it on one of the chicanes and stick it into the wall. Now, of course, that sounds rather mean and nasty, but of course Mark Scaife has had such a fantastic year this year, and you know, we don't see these sorts of slip-ups from him very much, so for a Ford fan that made me quite happy. Also quite remarkable there was that Craig Rounds was able to avoid that little incident, otherwise the HRT boys might have had a lot of work to do in the next couple of weeks. But also quite notable there was that the number of people who managed to stick their cars into the wall or into each other, and it was the car that they had ready for Bathurst. Now, I think that the V8 supercar races at the Gold Coast have proven time in and time out that it is a destroyer of cars. I remember quite well a couple of years ago that Glenn Seaton stuck a car into the wall quite hard, and it really has proven that it's not a place to take your number one car. John Balfour one took a very old car there just to keep his better car all nice and shiny, ready for the less risky races. So it was Garth Tander, Steve Richards and Greg Murphy all doing a significant damage to the car that they have ready for Bathurst. And I guess maybe it's the V8, the light series, that means that you really want to keep your spare car shiny and sell it off rather than keeping it in the garage gathering dust and only pulling it out for some of these support races. Yeah, it's one of the decisions you have to make.
Well, joining us now is from one of the other races that was running at the Honda Indy 300. We had some races for the GDP Nations Cup car, and joining us now is Chris Nixon. Chris, how'd the guys go up there?
G'day, Craig. Let's just let this helicopter pass. And give me that question again, please.
Well, it's Colin here, Chris.
Hi, Colin.
How did the guys go up there at the Honda Indy? Anybody do the wrong thing, and what are the results?
Well, it was a pretty interesting third race today in the GTP Nations Cup. Unlike most of the other races up here this weekend, with the exception of the Champ Cars, of course, ours was a championship round. It was round 7 of the 8 rounds in our series this year. It was an interesting race to get today, as it's been all weekend. Jimmy Richards won the first two races on Friday and Saturday, and started from pole today, but it wasn't Jim's race. He ended up finishing third. Peter Fitzgerald in the other GT3 molted away at the start and had an all-the-way win from Paul Stokel. But of course the upshot of all that was that Jim still had enough points to wrap up the inaugural GTP Nations Cup, and so he is now the 2000 champion. His nearest contender was Mark Noske, and Noske was really in a desperate position today. He had to get maximum points and hope that Jim didn't get full points in the third race to have any chance of taking the fight into Bathurst next month. But far from that happening, in fact, Noske had a DNF just when he needed most to win some good points. He started off fourth on the grid. He was desperately trying to work his way up to the back of Jimmy. He tried to go under Vita Bradbury in the Porsche, in the TNT Porsche. They had it coming together. Basically, it was Bradbury's corner, and Nosky was stuck between a push and a concrete wall. And that was the end of his race on lap 2 out of 6. So from then on, Jimmy was able to cruise along in third place. He knew the position. He knew he didn't have to score any higher position than that. Nosky's chances of keeping the championship alive, or the one place in the championship alive, went out the window at that point, and so too did, in fact, his second place in the championship, because Fitzy's strong weak wind, and particularly his win today, meant that he's moved up to second in the series. So, quite a disappointing day for Mark Nosky.
So, once again, the reliability of the Porsches is really what's been coming through.
Well, it seems so, although there's nothing wrong with the Ferrari's reliability today, until the stage that hit the wall. And he had a secondary collision when he tried to reverse out of the situation he was in, and reversed into Peter Bradbury, and it appears that, in fact, the secondary damage might have been what put him out of the race. So a very frustrated and disappointed Mark Nosky, I'm sure, but he'll go to Bathurst in a few weeks' time with still a job to do, because he has to get himself from third place in the championship now up to second again. There's only about 4 points difference in it, so it'll be a great fight then between Fitzy and Mark Nosky in the Ferrari. Most of the Porsche drivers I spoke to today, however, seriously predict that the Ferrari will be one of the cars to beat at Bathurst. They think that it's going to be very, very strong at Bathurst.
And of course, no doubt by the time they get to Bathurst, they'll probably be all planning a few little tweaks for the cars.
Yes, I should think so. Just harking back to Richard's win again, it's very interesting to know that he has competed at 9 out of the 10 Gold Coast Indy events. He's competed in 6 different categories. He's competed in NASCAR, Oscar, V8, GTP, GTP Nations Cup, and Super Touring. Typical of Jim, he won two races this weekend. He won two races last year. He's won in NASCAR, as we know. Been very, very successful. In fact, he's probably the most successful individual driver out of any category, certainly including the Champ Car, who's competed at Indy over all those years. And this is yet another title to Richard's mantelpiece.
That just goes to show that Jim Richards has definitely got a pedigree there, and the racing figure, I think, will probably make it very, very hard for everybody to try and beat him when he actually gets to Bathurst, which he does know like the back of his hand.
He does know like the back of his hand, but he and Peter Fitzgerald were the first to say that they think the Ferrari is going to be quick there. It's streamlined, it's top end, and it'll be interesting to see. And, of course, Nosky now has very little to lose by really going for it. Whereas Jimmy's got the championship in the bag, but he always likes to win, Jim. And not only did he win, but he came out with a car without a mark on it. One of the few, I suspect, who was able to claim that.
Good on, Jim. Well, Chris Nixon, thanks very much for being up there, and what's been happening with the GDP Nation stuff up the Honda Indy 300.
Thank you very much, Colin, and listeners. We'll talk to you in a few weeks, no doubt, to tell you all about Bathurst preparations.
No worries. Thank you very much, Chris Nixon. Chris Nixon there up on the Gold Coast. You hear all the things still going, helicopters and things going left, right and centre.
Yes, the Inside Motorsport really takes you there. We've got all sorts of noises live from the events, and of course a few minutes ago we had that siren and stuff on one of the interviews, so yes, we'll really take you there.
Well, the man, he was in the right place a few weeks ago. Now he's at the wrong end of the world where the action's taking place. Here is Craig Revell.
Well, he's still in a pretty good place, enjoying a few NASCAR races now, so, yeah, who can criticise that?
Well, here's our postcard from the USA with Craig Revell. Peter, you were talking a little bit earlier this evening, and here's what he's got to say about where he's at in the USA.
Hello, who's enjoying a great trip there of Formula One, NASCAR and all sorts of stuff? How's it going, Craig?
Well, not too bad, not too bad. A hectic weekend for us, and I must apologise to everyone for last weekend when we were at Charlotte, the Lowe's Motor Speedway, and saw Bobby Labonte really strengthen his title chances in the NASCAR Winston Cup and put on a great display, which perhaps was helped by what Ricky Rudd, who finished in third place, had called a phantom yellow. He certainly didn't see anything on the track that required the yellow, and the Ford, the Texaco Haviland Ford, was a much better car on old tyres after a long run than on the new tyres. So once the yellow flags were up the way, well, then it was Labonte who was the best on new boots. And he went on to, as I said, strengthen his position in the championship. This weekend, they go from the 1.5 mile oval of Lowe's Motor Speedway to the Monster 2.6 mile oval, that is Talladega Super Speedway. For a number of reasons, it's an interesting race this weekend, and, well, unfortunately, I have to report another horrific accident at Texas Motor Speedway on Friday night, where a young driver by the name of Tony Roper went headfirst into the wall, and although I have not heard confirmation of it, it does seem like it was a fatal accident, and that's terrible news there. An ASA driver who is just in his first year of NASCAR Craftsman Truck, and yeah, just for making the third driver and making all three series now having fatalities in this season. The two, of course, one in Busch Grand National, which was Adam Petty, another in Winston Cup, which was, of course, Kenny Irwin Jr., and now Tony Roper. As I said, it does seem to be a very bad year for all the fans of NASCAR Winston Cup, and particularly those three families. And, well, one family that has had to overcome quite a bit this year is the most famous family in NASCAR racing, and that is Richard Petty. And we had an opportunity yesterday to have a chat with the legend of Richard Petty, and I first started asking him about how his father got involved in NASCAR racing.
Now, my father was a big road racer as far as racing up down highway. They always had a old model car with a new model engine in it with dead horsepower and all that. They used to race on Saturday night, race for a lot of money. They didn't race for fun of it. And then once in 1949, when Jeff started doing it, he said, you know, maybe I'd make some money at this. So he got into racing on Sunday instead of Saturday night. You know, when I first started working on the cars when I was like 11 or 12 years old, my big ambition was just to work on the cars. And probably until I was 18 or 19 years old, I never even thought that much about driving. I was still interested in working on the cars. And when I got to be 21, then I started driving. So I started from the engineering part of it, working on the race car. And that was my first love. And then once I drove, then I working on it becomes second love. First love is driving.
And of course, with someone stepping into the famous number 43 first, was Bobby Hillen, and now it's John Andretti. And I asked if he ever had the driver say if there was any pressure on them by driving the 43.
You know, nobody ever does like with this. Would that make me get a more in the yard or wash in the house? You know, John's done a real good job. John's personality fit in real good for Pitt Enterprises. You know, he's laid back, low-key. If he wins, he's excited about it. If he loses, he don't get too excited about it. But, you know, it's just everyday deal. So he's been really good with us. And, you know, next year, Kyle will move to the 45 car, the Sprint being their being advertised in that car. John will still be with the Curios. And then we've got a new boy coming up to drive with you. Georgia Pacific. That's another sponsorship. We'll have three Dodgers next year. Then we also have a truck in the truck series. We'll probably have a race car too. We're only loading the race cars right now. You still look good to us. You know, we had Adam coming along, had a 5-year plan, you know, to bring in new blood and new deals with the Dodge. So we still got the 5-year plan. We just had to put Chuck Jones in basically for where he's going to drive the 44 car. Sort of plug him in where Adam was supposed to go. But, you know, we still got a plan. I don't know if we're working on it, but we had a plan, and we're trying to bring the Enterprise back up to the level it was 10, 15 years ago. And so we figured new blood, young blood, would clog us on tape. So we're still on our Joe plan there. We just got to make sure it works.
Well, Petty Enterprises is coming back from a tragic year, and well, if you put the tragedy of Adam Petty aside, they also had a few changes sponsorship-wise, which saw STP move itself from major sponsorship to minor sponsorship. But they have done quite a bit of work at Petty Enterprises to strengthen the foundation. And in fact, when I get back, there is a lot more to that interview, which we'll be able to let you in on over the next few weeks. And of course, well, Talladega Super Speedway, 2.6 miles around, and you really can't appreciate it until you're standing on the inside of the turn looking at the roofs of the car as they drive by. And a man who almost 30 years ago made his first Winston Cup appearance is Darrell Waltrip. In the meantime, he has won NASCAR championships and a whole host of races, and in the late 80s, early 90s, was voted by the fans as the most popular NASCAR driver in Winston Cup racing at that time. He is out there running in the 66 Kmart car, and tomorrow will be his final start at the Talladega Super Speedway. And in fact, they have taken the car that he started in 29 years ago, the restored car, and he will be doing some laps in that restored car before he goes out into his Monte Carlo to race in tomorrow's race, or this morning, or this afternoon's race, as it is in our time. And we were fortunate enough to also have quite a long chat to Darrell Waltrip, and you'll be hearing a bit more about that in the weeks to come. But here are a few thoughts from DW.
Long time ago. 800 and some races to go, so for me, I think it's my 810 start, somewhere along in there. So, obviously running a lot of laps. The thing I remember the most about them was I led. First time I'd ever been to a track like this. Well, I think I've been to Daytona in a sportsman race. It was the first time I'd been to a Winston Cup race in 1972, and I had a pretty good car, actually. It's going to be here tomorrow. I'm going to drive around the track, as a matter of fact. And but I led a few laps in that race and actually had a very legitimate chance at winning. That was based on a tire controversy that was going on at the time. Goodyear had come here with a new treaded tire. They used to run they still do, the slick tire. This was the only place where we ran the slick tire. Everywhere else they run a treaded tire. And so they had come here and done some testing, and they determined that they would run the treaded tire here like they ran everywhere else. Well, lo and behold, they get in the race, the speeds go up, the tires are flying all to pieces. Well, when I bought my car from Holman and Moody, the last place it had raced was here. And so when I bought it, I got, I think I got 12 or 16 tires with it, which happened to be Talladega tires. So that had a lot to do with me running here the first time, because I had the tires and the car had been raced here before. And so, you know, I figured Talladega was a good place to start off. So lo and behold, we get in the race. And all the fast guys, Richard, Buddy, Cale, Bobby, Donnie, everybody's having tire trouble. Their tires are flying apart. And everybody is running around looking for the old slick tires like I had. The ironic part about that was my crew chief was Jake Elder. Jake was livid. He said, "You can't win. I had no tools. I had a car, and I had a few tools and a few spare parts that I'd gotten with the car, and that's all I had. I'd gone to Western Auto and bought my tools, my jacks, my jack stands, that cheap stuff like you use in your home garage." So my crew chief's not happy at all. And he's a winning crew chief. He's been around a long time. And he said, "Man, you can't do any good down here like this. You got the wrong tires. Your car's no good. You're wasting your time." He left me here on Saturday afternoon in Happy Hour and went back to the hotel. He was so disgusted. Well, we get in the race, and everybody's having tire trouble, except the guys that have the old tires, like myself, and another guy named James Hilton, who happened to have all old tires, so he couldn't afford new ones. And lo and behold, I'm going along, and all of a sudden, holy cow, I just passed Richard Petty. Man, I just passed David Pearson. I'm passing all these fast cars. I didn't know there was a tire problem. And, you know, our communication wasn't that good at the time. I didn't know there was a tire problem. Then the next thing I thought of was I had this crew chief named Jake Elder, who is notorious for cheating. Well, we raced restrictor plates then, too. I said, uh-oh, I know what's happened. He's left the plate. We've got the wrong plate on this car, or maybe we don't even have a plate on this car, and I'm going to get in big trouble my first race out. That's all I could think about was I was cheating. But as the day wore on, and something happened to my car, the engine in my car, and I fell out of the race after leading a good bit, and I got in the garage, and then I found out, well, the tires were the problem, and we wasn't cheating. And I actually ended up making more money that day selling my tires than I did in the race itself. So I sold all my tires to the teams that were having tire trouble, and I ended up making more money selling used tires than I did what I won in the purse. So that was my introduction into Winston Cup racing, big-time auto racing. Was right here, and it was it was one of those weekends that was just full of things happening, you know, that I was not even aware of or prepared for. But bottom line was, I made the race, I led the race, and I actually had a chance to win the first race I'd ever been to. And that was just about as much encouragement as I needed right there to know that, hey man, this is gonna be good. This is gonna be fun. As a matter of fact, on Saturday night of that weekend, I went back to Nashville and raced at the fairgrounds down there where I was track champion and win every week. I was having to go back home in my early years of first 2 or 3 years of racing. I drive all the way back to Nashville. We didn't have airplanes then. I drive all the way back to Nashville when it was feasible and race on Saturday night to make enough money to be able to race my Winston Cup car on Sunday. So did a lot of travel, a lot of driving around, drove the truck myself, me and Stevie and our little dog Charlie Brown. We'd load the car up, take off down the highway going to Darlington or Martinsville or Charlotte or Daytona, just wherever it was. We loaded everything up and took off. That's how it was in the early years. Yeah, it's hard to believe. It's hard to believe that it was that long ago. Because even though as long ago, when you talk about 29, 30 years, whatever it was, so many things have happened in that period of time that it just doesn't seem like you could have done all the things that I've done in that period of time. I know that's a long time ago, but I've done a lot of things in that period of time. And the sport has changed so much in that period of time. And things are so different than they were when we started off. And so it seems like that's another whole era, you know, which it was. That era doesn't exist today. So I have gone through a huge transition from where I started, where the sport was, to where we are today. And that's a huge change in a life. It's kind of like, I think about it, it's like people that were born in the early 1900s that saw cars and then saw airplanes and then saw computers and then saw men on the moon. That's kind of the progression that this sport has taken. Like the cars were not really race cars when we started, and then they became race cars. And now they're guys look like space, they look like astronauts, and they look like they're driving spaceships.
And Darrell Waltrip there does tell some great stories, and we will be hearing a few more of them over the weeks to come. But finally, I just have seen confirmation, Tony Roper, he was 35 and killed from the injury suffered in the Carson track at the Texas O'Reilly 400. So, as I said, the tragedy of NASCAR's 2000 season has continued here late in the season. And I know that tonight at Gateway International, the ASA, the American Speed Association, ran its final race for the season 2000. And Butch Miller, a man we spoke to when we were at Indianapolis and watching the ASA at IRP, has picked up his third win of the season and he did dedicate the win to the Roper family. And whilst he picked up his third win, the championship eventually went to a fellow by the name of Gary Sainamont. And when he spoke to CNN, he was extremely happy about picking up his second championship and the first of the 2000s.
Unfortunately, I watched the tape and said that, you know, you win your first championship and you might be a flash in the pan. Well, we won our second championship, now we've done something, and it feels awful sweet, you know, for this whole API team. Great teamwork all year. Wins, Rain Automotive, GM Goodrich. I mean, it's just been a total team effort. And I'm so happy to be here. Great podium finish for Sears Leeway, and congratulations to Brett Miller on the win.
Yeah, that's Gary Sainamont speaking after his podium finish, second place at the Gateway 200, which was on round of the American Speed Association Championship. And, well, Peter, that's about it from over here. And unfortunately, next week I will be winging it back to you, so it will be my last postcard for America until a fortnight's time when, you'll all start to take some of the other people that I've been fortunate enough to meet in my journeys throughout North America.
Yeah, that's right, Craig. Unfortunately, your hobnobbing with all the stars will come to an end. It was fantastic to hear from Richard Petty and of course, Dale Walter, a fantastic driver, but even a more legendary storyteller. So thank you very much for that, and we look forward to having you back here, and have a great trip back.
Yeah, we look forward to that.
Yeah, Craig Revelle there in the USA. Well, we've been fortunate enough quickly to dive into our sources and come up with some interviews, post-race interviews from up at the Honda Indy up there at Surface Paradise. We're just quickly just keying this up here, ready to bring that to you and quickly get those up for you. And let's see, I've got to find it here. Here we go. Yes, this is the one I'm after. Right. Whoa. He says, well, just sort of happens here, isn't it? And our first up, of course, is our winner from today up there at the Honda Indy 300, Adrian Fernandez.
It's a fantastic feeling. I tell you what, this team never gives up, and we have a tough weekend all trying to get the car set up for the qualifying, and me and my teammate Roberto, we just couldn't get the handle of the car. And this morning we made some changes, and the car felt pretty decent. And I said to John, I think I can race with this car. At the beginning of the race, I had a big moment with Max Pastis where he made a mistake in one of the corners. I was right side by side him, and he squeezed me to the wall where I almost hit him. Apart from that, you just stay out of trouble. The first car incident, and things like that. It wasn't a matter of staying clean and not making any mistakes.
Your team gambled on the last pit stop and kept you out there and said, hey, we can go the distance. The yellows helped you because you were getting pressure from Kenny Brack and gave you enough fuel to hold him off.
Yeah, exactly. If we would have come in, the best we could have called for was for third. So, I mean, the team knew I could do the mileage, and we took a gamble, but it was a measurement gamble because we knew we could do the fuel mileage. Of course, it was going, we have to be defensive to be able to get to the end. But at the end, God smiles on us because those yellows at the end help us big time.
Okay, about Fontana. Again, you were the winner. You got the million last year. The championship's up for grabs. Your team puts a good car into you there. What about it?
I think that's a track that we know how to race well, and we're the defending champion, and everything looks pretty good for us.
It does, and he just got off the phone, by the way, to team owner Pat Patrick, who's back home. Pat making the phone call to him. And Adrian being congratulated by his long-time FedEx Championship Series owner.
And, of course, second place name, Kenny Brack, and this is what he had to say after the race.
No, it was one of the things, he got in front of us somehow, and during the pit sequence, I guess, somehow, and, I tried a few times to really push him, but couldn't make him into a mistake or anything, so I had to settle for second.
How wild was it out there? This looked like a figure eight race.
It was pretty tough in the resource, I'd say. I mean, it was pretty tight there for a while. But it was very interesting. I want to thank my team because they gave me a very good car today.
Yeah, Kenny Brack, obviously very happy with that second place in today's Honda Indy 300.
Now, Peter, that about wraps us up this week. That's all the time we've got. We'll have results next weekend from the San Remo Rally. I think the two, Michael Guest, the Australian rally driver, who's driving in behind our excellent World Rally Car. This is his World Rally Car Timac debut, and we're no doubt probably looking very carefully to see how Michael goes in that event.
Yes, it'll be interesting. He's always one that provides plenty of excitement, and we're all wishing him well on his World Rally campaign over there.
Yep. Of course, then his event, his next event, after will be the Telstra Rally Australia in Perth in November, so it's going to be looking really good. That's all from us this week inside Motorsport. We'll be back with people next week. Good luck to Sandy and Peter. People may not know, Sandy is Peter's wife, and they're expecting their first. Fingers crossed everything goes right here this coming week. So if we don't hear you next week, we'll know where you are.
That's right. It's pretty exciting and scary time. So, yeah, fingers crossed. Thanks for that.
That's all from us this week inside Motorsport. We'll be back again next week with all the latest news of what's happening around the world in motorsport.
Winner double pass to the Melbourne Cup, return airfares, accommodation, grandstand tickets.
Wow!
Like putting unlucky betting tickets, $10 or more board at the end.
1-800-246-868. Call now. 1-800-246-868.
Around Australia.
Is Inside Motorsport.